Welcome back to the Otaku DX show with Veef and Deef. Gonna mix things up a little bit. Can try to do what we've been playing and what we've been watching in the same segment because the other one ran a little long. Okay, so I've actually been playing a lot of stuff recently because I got another PSN card to buy things. But actually, first I want to talk about how I brought out my old NES to play some Nintendo games on a big TV. Because I actually have an NES 2, or the NES Model 101.
Is that the skinny one?
That's the skinny top-loading one.
That's what I thought. Those are cool.
They're cool, and they work. Unlike the old ones. Mm. They will work forever, basically, because they have no moving parts other than the dust cover. Only problem with the American one is that they only have an RF out.
Hmm.
So they go through the cable, and the
yeah.
The signal is deliciously snowy and terrible. Weird thing, though, is that the Japanese, they call it the AV Famicom, is very similar in design to that one, to our NES 2. Mm-hmm. It actually does have only AV outs. But there's some rumors that there actually were AV versions of that Nintendo that were only given out as replacements for the NES 2s. Like, people complained so much that they actually made up a whole bunch of them about the video signal.
Interesting.
So it's weird. I mean, you can mod that thing to have AV out, but I'm not that
ambitious.
You should
try calling up Nintendo and see if anything happens.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like there's rumors that there's some confirmation they do exist, but... Because I had a weird itch. I wanted to play Kirby's Adventure. I realize it's actually a lot of it is a tech demo for the NES.
Well, that's the whole thing with Kirby to begin with, isn't it?
Yeah, he is. He's always kind of like the gimmicky tech demo.
He was a placeholder character originally.
Yeah, that's true. No, but I mean in the sense that they do a lot of like cool sprite tricks with with the game. Like in the third world called Butter Building, which is hilarious.
Those Kirby levels have the best names.
Yeah, Grape Garden. Mm-hmm. Was it Ice Cream Beach or something like that?
There's like Yogurt something.
Yogurt Island.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But in the Butter Building levels, you go to this, there's usually this one segment in the middle where you're outside of the building, and as you move left to right, the tower that you're on actually kind of spins around.
Oh.
And that's just a big sprite trick. It's like, look at us. We can do this huge-ass sprite trick with the background because we have, like, special chips in the NES card or whatever.
Plus processing.
Like, no, that's what Sega does.
I know. It's what they say they do.
Because Sega does what Nintendo don't.
God, that was so... Yeah.
But it's really funny because it doesn't really add anything to the gameplay, but it's just like, hey,
it's
NES
just a
can
trick,
do,
though.
Yeah, we can do this now. And there's a lot of like segments where after you get some kind of weird, unique power, like the suplex or the throw power, they just put you in like a corridor with some stuff to suck up and do things with.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's not really that exciting.
But it's fun to do the special thing, like suplex. Suplex is effing amazing.
Yeah, actually, in Kirby's Adventure, it's called Backdrop.
Really?
For some reason.
Interesting.
But it's the same power. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty game. It's a relaxing game. Really great to play waiting for the next period to start in hockey. Because, hey, you know, NES, flip it on, it's ready.
Every time.
Unlike Mr. PS3.
Loading.
And also, I have been playing some Ultimate Air Combat, which is a great game. I don't know if you ever played it.
I don't think I have.
It's one of the Nintendo sort of flight simulators. Mm. You know, why would I be playing that? Because I'm a goddamn airplane nerd. I used to own a lot of those games for my Super Nintendo and NES, but I got rid of some of them. But this one, what's really good about it is that it very seamlessly combines two kinds of gameplay. There's, you know, in the cockpit dogfighting. Mm-hmm. And there's also this isometric ground attack mode,
Because you launch looking at that in some screenshots here.
Yeah. So you go off, you go and fight some enemy MiGs, shoot them down, and then you go into the isometric mode and blow up some ground targets. And, you know, it works really well going back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun game. Oddly enough, in Japan, it is the Iron Eagle 3 game.
Hmm.
So I don't know if that's how it was developed and they changed it to something more generic over here, or they actually had... It's a case of they had this American game and they needed to give it a license in Japan or something. Or whatever. Yeah, it's a fun game. It has like voice samples too. Like when you start up, there's a scene where this plane comes on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's really close up. You can see the pilot. And then he turns to you and goes, "Yeah!" He gives you a thumbs up. Also, you hear that same... "Yeah!" every time you shoot somebody down.
How often do you shoot people down?
A lot.
Oh, dear.
It's great, though. It's just like, you shot down an enemy plane. Yeah! You blew up this bridge. Yeah!
Oh, it counts for, like, destroying things, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, totally. Great.
Totally. Also, one cool thing is that when you play through, your airplanes get upgraded. They get, like, more hard points. The backfire gun, which I never ever use. You could shoot a bullet behind you, and it's useless. Only in the ground attack stages.
Mm.
And each one gets a special weapon that they can replace their optional fuel tank with. The F-18 gets an anti-air laser cannon.
What?
Which will one-shot anything that gets in the way.
I thought this was supposed to be like...
Well, it's not... I mean, it already has power-up, so it's not realistic.
But laser... It's just...
Yeah, okay. It's great. The Harrier gets the Thunderball, which apparently... I never really used it that much, but apparently it kills every airplane on screen besides you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, and that I can believe, but for some reason the laser is just making me think that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No, it's great. It's cool. It's better than having missiles.
Very true.
Because it recharges. Mm-hmm. You keep using it. The F-14 kind of gets shafted. It gets a ground attack laser, so it can kill things beneath it. It's like, eh, that's lame. Anyway, it's a pretty fun game. It just kind of gets harder and harder as it goes on, with more and more enemies shooting more and more missiles at you. But yeah, pretty fun. So for the PS Triple, I went and bought some video games. I got Future Cop LAPD, which oddly enough is an EA game, but you know, back when they made not crappy games like SimCity. One of the working titles for Future Cop was apparently like Future Strike or Cop Strike. Because it's actually a strike game, like Desert Strike, Urban Strike, yada yada. It's great, though. It's a third-person 3D mech game. Mm-hmm. And you run around, you are the X-1 Alpha robots, police robot. It's in this kind of tongue-in-cheek, cyberpunk-y future. You know, there's lots of goofy jokes all around. Especially in the intro where your robot, which can turn into a hovercraft, you know, is... flying around shooting stuff, and then it stops in front of a crime scene, turns into a robot, and it's like, everyone put your hands up, and there's like a bunch of like bullets and missiles flying at you, and then a tomato, and then after that your robot just mows them all down
like an actual tomato.
Yeah, someone throws a tomato at your robot.
Oh man, I would kill that guy so fast.
Yeah, also all the when cinematics have silly stuff, like at one point where you're at the Hollywood Boulevard and, you know, there's some concrete and your robot just kind of like looks down at the concrete, uses the flamethrower to heat it up, and then puts its foot down in it to make the footprint. Other silly things like that.
That's actually kind of cute.
Yeah. It has co-op too, split-screen co-op, which is always fun. It also has this thing called Precinct Assault, which I played a lot with my friend back in high school. It's kind of like a base defense game. You run around, you make your own tanks and stuff. It's like a tower defense game, more or less. Mm-hmm. So, very cool. And also I got one of my favorite games, Jumping Flash 2, Big Trouble in Little Moo. And you have to say the full title every time you mention it.
Every single time.
Always. And you got to say it like the way the guy says it when you turn the game on.
I've seen this guy before, but I've never actually played it.
They are really great games. They're kind of on the easy side, but they're just wonderful games. They are some of the few first-person platformers, 3D platformers, that do it well.
Mm.
And why is that? Because your vision tilts down when you jump. So you can see where your feet are, and you can land perfectly every time. But the cool thing about it is that you can, in this version, you can triple jump. So you can jump and jump and jump and get really far up there. And it's like, oh, this is beautiful stuff below. It's like, it's an early PS1 game, so it doesn't look that good. But it,
yeah, I can tell.
It's very stylized, so it aged pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of personality to it. You know, the whole backstory is Robot, the robot rabbit, who I want to believe I subconsciously named Robits after. He has to help out his former enemy, Baron Aloha, because Baron Aloha is, you know, a taxpayer like anybody else. And currently, his planet of Little Moo is being attacked by the giant Captain Kabuki, who just goes around taking planets and putting them into little glass bottles. You know, giant glass bottles, but either way. So you just kind of go from planet to planet, and you go from level to level, and just kind of do stuff.
Jump on shit.
Yeah, you have to collect the four Moo-Moos to get to the exit. Moo-Moos, which are these little, that very Japanese alien design, like a squid thing, with little tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
That just looks so cute, and they go, Moo, 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 in the game. But it's really cute. There's a lot of like weird jokes I didn't catch at first because, you know, the resolution on PlayStation wasn't that good. Like the fact that if you look at the payphone that Baron Aloha is calling from on the asteroid in space, you can actually see like numbers for call girls.
Really?
Yeah. That's like, oh, Japan. I'm surprised that even got through, probably because the resolution was like super crappy on the original version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great game. I would suggest, actually, no. I've been making some headway in Psychonauts, and I think a lot of like reviewers who really like that game don't really tell you about is the fact that it really starts slow. It kind of goes in spurts, and once you kind of get into it, it starts to pick up. Because, you know, the whole premise is that you're this kid named Rasputin, or Raz.
Yeah.
Who is a budding psychic. And he sneaks off from the circus to go to a psychic summer camp and learn the ways of being a psychonaut, which are people that basically go inside other people's minds and do 3D platforming stuff. So, a lot of character, a lot of colorful stuff going on. Kind of has a similar aesthetic to Tim Burton stuff, but not as obnoxious.
Yeah. Actually like Psychonauts. Like, the art style, that is.
Yeah. The first, like, really good level I played is where you have to train with the secret agent Sasha 9 to learn how to shoot stuff with your mind, use the Psy Blast power. And the way this starts off, it's basically a big floating cube in the middle of nowhere, and this is inside his mind. He's all about order, you know, being a cool secret agent kind of guy. And he says it's like, to learn how to use the Psych Blast, you have to picture something that you really, really hate. And Sasha really hates tacky lamps.
Huh.
So a bunch of tacky lamps just pop up, and he's like, okay, Rasputin, shoot those things. He's like, yeah, okay. So, and then afterwards, he introduces you to the idea of the censors, which is these little, you know, bureaucratic guys who run around people inside people's minds, and they try to get you out of their mind. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you don't belong in their mind.
Yeah.
And in order to earn your merit badge for the Psy Blast, you had to kill 1,000 of these. And they would just come out one by one inside. Yeah. One by one out of this little spout thing. But you can go over and mess with the dial, make them come out faster and faster. Mm-hmm. But eventually you do it so they're too fast, and it kind of wrecks poor Sasha's mind. Well, he's like Mindscape or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that in the parts of the cube start to open up and spit out like a huge ass bed and like spires and things. You have to climb up and you have to shut down all of the spouts that are shooting off the sensors. And then at the end, when you do this, you can travel between all the different sides of the cube. You just kind of rock up one side and get onto the other one. So, you shut off one side, you go to the other side, more stuff pops off, you do this again and again. And then when you close off all of the spigots, Rasputin's like, so what happens if you like close off all of the spigots? He's like, well, and Sasha's like, well, there'd be a tremendous buildup of psychic energy and an explosion. And then you see that this giant-ass, like, mutant sensor guy comes out of nowhere with a giant-ass rubber stamp and smashes poor Sasha onto the stamp, and you have to beat this thing down as a boss fight.
Oh, wow.
But I do like at the end of all this chaos, Sasha's like, okay, here's your merit badge. Let us never speak of this again. Oh, I want everyone to know that Ben just messaged me and said, Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its.
Yep. Cheez-Its.
I like Cheez-Its.
Okay.
The Tabasco ones are best.
So that's all I've really been playing.
Okay. Because I was at home, I did not have my wonderful computer Magdalene on me. Yes, my computer's name is Magdalene. This is Mark IV specifically.
You goddamn Xenosaga fan.
Yeah. But I played some GameCube games, because I still have those, and I have nothing better to do with my time.
You know what's great about the GameCube, though?
It won't fucking break.
No, the carrying handle.
Oh, yeah. I always forget about that detail. It's funny, because usually I just shove it in a bag and call it a day, but no, I don't need the bag.
You don't need the bag. You don't need the gun, either.
Okay, I'm glad you saw where I was going with that.
Always. Always. I am a commando. I fight for love.
Anyway, so I decided to play Custom Robo again. Because it is the one Custom Robo game that came over here.
Yay, I played that game.
That game's fun. I just kind of farted around in story mode again. And this was an ugly game. Sometimes.
Yeah, it's also clunky as hell with the way it does the fighting thing.
Well, the fighting is fine. The parts that are terrible are the story parts.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like where it's just like people standing around those cyber game things, and mm-hmm. you got to go up to them.
Yeah,
and you can fight.
One thing I hate is instead of having this game does that thing where when a character talks, it makes a like. Mumbling noise, so it sounds they're talking.
Yeah.
And for this one, it's like, and it's okay for the guys because it's just like, but for the girls, it's like, it's the most annoying high pitched noise I've ever heard in my life. It's one of the few games where I actually want to actively,
hit the
just
mute button,
not listen to it, and just skip through the dialogue.
Can't you just like turn that off in the options?
I don't ever check options.
Oh, well, that's your biggest mistake in life.
Apparently. Oddly enough, I was more amused by the dialogue in the game than anything else. Noises aside, I just try to forget the parts where I have to talk to girls. Also, one of these...
Hey, you know what? That is a perfectly legitimate thing to do in all walks of life.
Absolutely. One of the girls in this game looks just like Miku. It's kind of uncanny.
Well, Miku's design isn't exactly that unique.
Yeah, this is very true.
I mean, she's also in Love Love.
She's all... What else is she in? She was also in Nadesco and everything. God, I forgot what a douchebag the main character looks like.
Spiky hair and everything.
Yeah, the best thing about this game is actually the dark-skinned guy whose name I don't remember. I think his name's Henry. What he would often... This game was like terribly guilty of just kind of going into tutorial mode out of nowhere. And you could always ask if they want the characters to repeat that again. And if you ever, like, you had three options. It's like, yes, I understood that. No, I don't understand that. And there was always a third really stupid one. And it's just like, you say something really stupid. It was like, man, I could really go for a cheese pizza right now. And the guy would just yell at you and say, what are you talking about? We're going to go fight robots with our minds.
Yeah. Freaking mind lasers. Freaking mind lasers.
Yeah. This game was kind of stupid, but I loved it. There's a lot of depth in it.
Yeah, like, it's the whole like running around and shooting stuff, and it's like the game Distrega, sort of. Only if I've ever played Distrega, I know.
Yeah, when I played this game, I only played as like three units when I played it, because there are different kinds of robot frames you can build off. Like you have the big head models, which are very slow on the ground, but they jump super high and have like triple jumps. And the one I would always play is the Strike Vanisher Javelin, which is a pretty cool robot. And he could basically teleport in any direction three times. And that's always fun to play as. But I tried to do something a little different because I always played as that one when I was ever playing the game. And so I went with, I don't remember the name of him, but there's the lowly robot, for the lack of a better word.
Well, you know, Fei Yen, she started a trend.
No. I mean, like, because there's those, they have female ones, and then they have female, or like, little female ones. Like, there's, I think they're called Aerial Beauties is what they're called, is what just the regular female ones are. And then you have the smaller ones, which can only jump once, but they run really fast. And a strategy I learned, which I thought was really fun to do, is do that, give the little robot super fast running feet, because you have different kinds of feet in the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
Make it so that she turns incredibly quickly. Give her seeking missiles and a shotgun. And this is the most effective way I've ever seen to win this game.
Hell yeah. Just run around and shoot things. They can't hit you. You can hit them.
But yeah, so that was some good old-fashioned robot fun. And other than that, I played some Soul Calibur 2. And it occurs to me...
Did you just pick Link and use the bow and arrow?
No, because I'm not a jerk. And besides, if I'm going to do that, I'm just going to Pegasus boot them instead.
That's all I did the one time I played the GameCube version. Because, you know, I still got my Dreamcast.
Even though we're five games later into the series...
Yeah.
Unlike Tekken games, which are made by the same people, Soul Calibur games don't really ever start... Like, they look pretty similar. They've reached a very... high standard, I think, as far as character models go in CG, because that is still a really beautiful game, and usually those kinds of games don't age well, but like, I can't tell the difference between this or 4 or 5.
Well, you can tell by how more ridiculous Siegfried's armor gets.
Well, no, remember in 2, Siegfried wasn't technically a character.
Oh, was he still Nightmare?
He was still Nightmare. You could turn him into Siegfried, but he would still just kind of yell Nightmare things. It wasn't until 3 that they split him apart.
Okay, so who's supposed to... I mean, I thought Siegfried was the canon. And no, I guess he wouldn't be.
He is canon. What happens is at the end of 2, the way it works is that the official ending is that Siegfried breaks apart from
Nightmare.
And he kills Soul Edge effectively. And then some African jerk named Zassalamel shows up and he's like, you know what? I want Soul Calibur or Soul Edge. I'm going to go take fragments of Soul Edge and make a Nightmare. And so ever since then, Nightmare has been a separate entity from Siegfried. And that's also when they changed their movesets so that they play a little differently.
Hmm. No, I had thought that the canon ending for Soul Calibur was you play as Nightmare and you end him being Nightmare.
Well, that might be for one, but... No. For one, Xianghua destroys...
Oh, okay.
I can keep track of it. There's so many endings. But, yeah.
Let's talk about the deep and complex endings in King of Fighters.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I was playing that with my friend, too. King of Fighters 13.
I haven't played 13 yet, because I don't own a console.
I think it's not. There's PC releases. There might be. We had this funny thing, actually, because he also brought over Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. So I got to play it up to where the demo stops. Because this is like a pre-level before the first actual level.
Mm.
He had a really good joke about, because there's a lot of Metal Gear Rays in the first level. He's like, man, Rays are like the Corollas of Metal Gears. Anybody can get one. So yeah, it was cool. I liked it. The actual, you know, it's a lot harder than the demo, definitely.
Mm.
Boris, aka Russian Mike Hagger, does a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Tries to shoot things down with a Stinger missile launcher.
How's that go?
Yeah, not too good. They use the flares. There's like this Brazilian cyborg guy named Sam, and also this chunky ass cyborg guy with a Texas southern accent, like a Texan accent, who tells everybody to give war a chance. Why doesn't anybody ever think about all the people who make a good living off of war? All I'm asking is just give war a chance, as he eviscerates the poor guy you're supposed to protect.
Excellent.
Yeah. Everybody likes him because he has this shit-eating grin all the time.
Mm.
Also, I gotta say, there's a lot of ass shots in this game. I'm sorry. The camera loves cyborg ass. Because they're kind of like... They're not naked because they're cyborgs, but they have that, you know, anatomically correct ass with their cyborg parts. So...
On the topic of cyborg asses, real quick, I was listening to Pre-Order 66 recently, and they were talking about...
Can I finish my thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so because me and my friend Chris, we make a lot of jokes about crappy commercials. Every time the Metal Gear Geckos would come after us, I was like, I just want to sell you insurance. Moo. I can save 50% if you switch. Moo. And also when we were playing King of Fighters, he made the observation like, you know what? Ash Crimson has the same kind of weird ass pompadour that Flo does. That weird.
My God, like, you're right.
That weird like perm pompadour, whatever that is. Not a kind of a lady pompadour.
It's a thing with the hair.
So he actually made a custom palette for Ash Crimson to make him into Flo, so he can save you.
Excellent.
Save you money on your car insurance by using the snapshot in the bundle. Mm-hmm. It's like, whatever. I'm still gonna kick your ass with Kim, because Kim is awesome. Anyways, yes. Go ahead.
Kim's the shit. So, I was listening to Pre-Order 66, and they were talking about the new Figma Lady Armoroid coming out.
And, yeah, about that.
Yeah, you know how, like, it's funny, because they were talking about how it has a alternate lower body, so it has the one very gratuitous ass shot. And they were saying, I was like, you know, Figmas are pretty postable, why do they need this? And I'm just yelling at my screen... It's because Buichi Terasawa came down from the heavens, took down his ridiculous damn shades, and yelled at Max Factory and said, no, that shit ain't got enough ass.
Yes.
Seriously, every single picture of him, he looks ridiculous. He's one of those weirdos, if you ask me.
Yeah, you know.
That's all I have to say about Cyborg Ass.
Okay. That's okay. Anyway, I think we're done with the what we've been playing segment.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll start off with the what we've been watching. Mm-hmm. Oh, I will say, though, I did finish Level of Extra. So mm-hmm. That was a hell of an ending. Like you know, they genuinely make you feel both really good about your decision mm-hmm. and kind of bad for the other girl you don't choose.
Oh.
It's like, this is actually well-written and well-directed and well-paced, even though it's a visual novel.
Visual novels can get surprisingly way better than they should be sometimes.
Yeah, well, it really helps that this is the voiced version.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there is an unvoiced version of Love Life.
There might be.
Might have been like a CD version later on, or early on, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not like Tsukihime, where I want to play that game, but one, this art is really old. Two, there is no voicing in this game at all.
They probably did a re-release.
No, actually. Not that I'm aware of. Like, there's a sequel, and I believe that has voicing.
Hmm.
But the first game has not been updated since, I believe. If anyone is aware that I'm completely wrong, please do let me know.
Yeah, sometimes they release like a patch that has voices.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I've got to do the Maya route just to unlock Unlimited. And it's really weird to see the game in fast forward.
Really?
Just like going through, because it doesn't like skip those parts. It just kind of puts them on 10x.
Really fast.
Yeah, at like 10x speed. And it's like, whoa.
It's like so many expressions at once.
Yes, and then suddenly, oh, choice.
That one. Okay, go. Just hold down control more. Okay, going, 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 going.
No, it's just choice. A toggle, so it can just keep going.
Okay, I'm used to it on the PC versions of a lot of visual novel games. You just have to hold control the whole time.
No, this is just you push K, and it toggles. Gah! It toggles on skip whatever you've already seen.
That's way more convenient.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, the engine they use is very optimized for mm-hmm. delivery of visual novel content. Although, I do have to say, the Maya stuff makes her seem more like a naive idiot. When you, like, choose, like, oh, do this thing with Maya, and she's like, oh, that made me really happy, and it's like, oh. I'm really surprised that they really get you to care about her, because they pull some high-level anime-ass bullshit towards the end of the game. But it's like, man, it makes so much sense. I can't help it. I'm sorry for you, May. Let's not talk about the sex scene, though, because that is...
It was a sex scene. Moving on.
It was out of character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's like people, they're complaining there's no sex scene. Just toss one in here.
Well, because they cut that out for the console version or the mm-hmm. all-ages version of the PC release, so... Yeah, I liken it to, you don't call Terminator a porno because it has one sex scene.
Or same with Zone 2, 3, Part 2.
Yeah, or any of them.
Yeah.
Well, there was no sex scene in Part 3. Almost. Almost. So yeah, that was good. I think we can talk about some animes now. I will start, because... Alright, so I'm going to talk about some animes. Let's talk about Algaim. Haven't done any Algaim.
Is it almost over?
I'm at episode 38. Yeah.
Weren't you on like 37 last time?
I thought I was on 30. I hadn't watched it yet. I'm up to 39. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. It's getting a little more intense. It's like if this was the show from the beginning, I'd probably be more into it. But so there was a lot of fighting. Mm-hmm. But one cool interesting thing is that Daba has a confrontation with his half-sister Olibi, who is still under control of Poseidon. And at one point he like tries to use, because he has a flashback to when he and her were skiing, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of funny. Very like affluent white people thing to do, huh, Daba? It's like, because you know, you're totally royalty. Anyway. And so that's kind of their common experience that he tried to use to help break mind control was when he was like bandaging up her arm or something. Or she was like helping him. Or they were doing... No, they were both doing it. And at one point during the fight, you know, she's like full under control of Poseidon. Daba like bites his own tongue and puts the blood on a handkerchief and has Lilith fly the handkerchief out to her robot to kind of like break the mind control. And it's like, he's almost got it. But at the last second, she kind of gets away.
And I hate it when that happens in anime.
Yeah. Yeah, but the weird thing though is like how they end this episode where Lilith, the little fairy, and Daba, they're in the cockpit together. And Daba looks at her, just kind of like, you know, like he needs somebody right now. And then they cut to her and she's looking back at him. And he grabs her and he starts nuzzling her. And now I paused this and I was like, oh, this is a great screen cap. I'm going to post it on Robits. And after I posted it, I let it play, and then Daba says, "You're very warm. Let's stay like this for a while." And I was like, oh. And, you know, at first I was like, kind of, I was like, this is kind of awkward. But then, you know what? Now I'm like, this is the one true pairing in Elgheim. This actually makes sense. You know what? Because Daba rescued her from that weird-ass carny way back in the beginning. And she's been with him, you know, being his co-pilot, helping him save Ama when she gets kidnapped a couple times. Mm-hmm. You know, he needed somebody who could covertly knock out guards with sleeping gas, and damn it, she'd do that. But you know what? They are probably the two closest characters as far as, like, you know, something romantic.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is like the more realistic falling in love thing. And it's like, you know what? If this is how it ends, I would be fine with it because this makes sense. This is genuine love based on hardship. I'm sure it's really just like a weird Tomino thing. So I'm just going to...
It's like, this could all go in a completely different direction.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just have to wait and see.
Yeah. In the next episode, they're kind of building up a bit more where Giwaza had sent Nabal Han into Poseidon's mists to have her assassinate Poseidon. He found out that his ship is full of bugs, though. So they knew about the plan in the beginning. So, and he's like, you know what? Might have to sacrifice my old girlfriend for this. We're going to go to Poseidon's planet and kill her. Him, it, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of where we are right now. A lot of trepidation. Not really sure what's going on. Dab is trying to, you know, do some maneuverings and stuff. And the animation was really good in this fight, in this space battle. So that was kind of cool. Although I still have the same problem. It's like, you know what? All these robots just kind of do the same thing. They all have laser cannons and beam swords.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's kind of like whenever I play Super Robot Wars and I see a lot of units from the 80s and whatnot. And it's like, these aren't translated, so I just kind of spam. It's like, okay, which one of these is the beam saber again? Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So many of those 80s Sunrise shows.
It's like when Lasner has a beam saber. That always confuses me.
Lasner doesn't have a beam saber, though.
He did in J, I think, for some reason.
I think that's just they did that animation because he has the knuckle shot.
I was just looking. It's like, he has knuckle shot. Why does he need the beam saber? But anyway.
Yeah.
Point being, Lasner's a pretty cool robot.
It is, and I hear the show is pretty good too. It needs to get finished.
To more. Yeah.
Well, it needs to be finished. I'm not going to watch a show without finished fan subs. I hate that.
That's true. Yeah.
JoJo's, they actually had really good animation recently for the fight with Caesar and Wham. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Even though that episode was kind of the let's have Caesar dump his entire backstory and then get killed kind of thing.
Mm.
But, you know, it was still good. I liked it. It's not a spoiler that the manga super old guys. Come on. And come on, it's like someone's going to die in JoJo's. Of course they are.
It's like a statute of limitations as far as JoJo goes. Like, this is a... These are pretty old now.
Like, yeah. I watched three episodes of Sorimachi, and they were all great. I like the part, or I like the one episode where one of the characters is this owner of an antique shop. So she buys and sells stuff. And the skit goes where this husband comes in, and he's like, no, this wife comes in. She has a vase. She wants to get rid of it. She sells it to the shopkeeper. She's like, okay, thank you. The husband comes in. He's like, oh, there's my vase. I need to buy it back, whatever it costs. He takes it back. And they do this, you know, like three or four times. And then at some point, both the husband and wife come in. And they're arguing, you know. It's like, sell the damn thing. No, I want to keep it. Sell it. Keep it. Sell it. Keep it. The shopkeeper, her name is Shizuko, I think. She takes out a piece of tape. She makes a line on her little desk there. And she's just kind of sitting there with a grin on her face. And at the end, she's like, okay, that was about 5 round trips. You owe this much.
What?
No, because they kept putting it back and forth across
the line. Oh, okay. Yeah,
back and forth across the line. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm just going to make some cash off of this.
That's kind of great.
And there's the follow-up skit was like, there was this shop with an old lady, and she was closing it down, and she was selling the rainbow treats, like delicious little cream puffs with, you know, rainbow coloring on them. And Shizuka got one of them. She's like, oh, this is really good. Where's this shop? I mean, I don't even know where this is. I don't know what prefecture this is. And she actually gets on her motorcycle because, you know, every woman in anime is a cool biker chick too. Mm-hmm. And she's like, where is this place? I don't know where this is. And like the person at this random diner is like, oh, you're asking about the rainbow treats, aren't you? You're like the 10th person today. And then the actual thing, it's like, where they come from. Do you want me to spoil it?
Go ahead.
It turns out they come from the future.
What?
A time traveler went back in time. Because Hotori figures it's like, this prefecture doesn't exist, but maybe it will sometime in the future. Because they look on the back of the label to see where it was made.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they figure it out. It's like, this is from the future.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, and it's funny because they cut to the guy who was a time traveler at a press conference, and he was like, yeah, I did many experiments back in that time, but I'm glad to be home. And everybody's holding up signs for the rainbow treats, and he's like, yes. Yeah.
Most devious of acts.
Also, one of the episodes had, there were these weird-ass holes that showed up around town, like perfect holes in parts of a building and in the ground next to it. And Khan, who is Hotori's senior, you know, senpai, she's like, man, what the hell is this going on about? And then Hotori breaks down and she's like, don't tell anybody about this. But, okay, I had this, like, little ray gun. I found this little ray gun thing. And there was an alien who wanted it back. And it made holes and stuff, and I was really scared. And then the aliens came, and there was another alien. And they were arguing in gibberish language. And I was like, oh, I need to, like... And she shot the evil alien, and it disintegrated. And then she gave the little thing back to the good alien. But Khan was all like, oh, I believe you, because I actually have this little device that'll make things reassemble if you break them. So let's go fix those holes. And they do. But it also brings the other alien back to life. So it was kind of weird.
I really need to watch the show.
It's a weird show. I won't talk about any more spoilers. You got to kind of watch it.
Okay.
So I'm kind of done with.
All right.
My thing.
I've been keeping up with my shit, but I'm gonna mention two specifically. I'm continuing to watch Yamano Susume, or Encouragement of the Climb, that show about girls climbing shit. And they finally got up their first, like, actual mountain together, and the main character girl gets way too excited and doesn't pace herself, and she ends up collapsing because she overexerted herself. And so her friend bought her some dumplings to make her feel better. And this actually involved our first two-parter, because she buys her a little cell phone charm of a flying squirrel, and she's trying to give it to her as a gift to thank her. But the girl just keeps on ignoring her or doing other things, because this mountain, for some reason, that they went to is covered with so many different Japanese things. Like, it's like, oh, if you jump through these three rocks, you'll have good luck. Oh, if you rub this Buddha's head, you'll get good luck. Oh, if you rub this tentacle, you'll get good luck. There's like 50 of these things on this one mountain.
This is what Ikemusume does when she gets to the mountain.
Mm-hmm. And it's so busy that she doesn't have time to actually give it to her. And so that's where it ends on a cliffhanger. I was like, how will she get it to her? I was just amused that they put a two-parter in this for something that's 3 minutes long.
Hey, you gotta stretch your budget somehow. Oh, that reminds me, I've been watching Stray Title Robot Anime.
I need to catch up. I watched the first two.
They're getting really good, though.
Yeah.
Like when Mori brings the fan service.
I saw that. I chortled quite a bit.
Well, it's actually, it was really good in the recent episode, because they skipped the remixed opening thing to have an extra long prop comedy segment.
Mm.
And there were jokes about, like, boobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mori's voice actress was genuinely kind of miffed by ad women who have bigger boobs than she does. Yeah, they were definitely getting very, very offset. I have to wonder if it's like, did they record that part first? And they were like, man, this is all gold. We need to just cut
it's
the
like
other.
We need to do something with this.
We just need to have the whole thing and just cut the stupid opening remix thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is gold. Yeah, I do also like that Fuji totally screwed up her line. She was like, I was thinking into my beta days bit. No, wait, that's not right. And then Kata was like, beta carotene? It's like, no. Database, not beta days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the great thing about a show where it's like some cheap-ass animation program. You could just like do whatever the voice actors were doing.
Yeah.
So,
but, yeah, I'm going to catch up on that and we'll probably talk about it again. There were three episodes of Tamako Market that have aired since we last recorded, and the last two in particular have been probably some of the best. The seventh episode introduced a girl from the same island Dera, the bird is from. And she is a dark-skinned girl who is a fortune teller that is always making sure that Dera is in line, because he's kind of an extravagant, flamboyant jerk.
Hmm.
And they touch on that in the eighth episode, because after eating rice cakes constantly, he is kind of fat.
Again?
No, like...
Oh.
The way that...
I know. Well, he was skinny at first, right?
Yeah.
And you eat all... And
the way they learn this is pretty fantastic. Which is that Makino Kana, the girl who you can tell is my favorite because I actually learned her name, the carpenter girl, she builds a birdhouse for Dera. And he tries to go into it, and he's not fitting, and so they're pushing him in from behind.
Garfield! And
then he gets stuck.
Garfield! Sorry.
Not quite, but... And she just kind of looks, and she says... My measurements were wrong. I'm a failure as a carpenter. There's only one thing I can do. And then she pulls a... Apparently she just has a wood shaver on her at all times. And she gets ready to start dismantling the thing. And so this whole episode is basically about Dera trying to lose weight and not eating mochi. And so she makes a little sign for him to wear, which basically reads, "I'm trying to lose weight.
Do not
Don't
feed.
Give me food.
Don't feed the bird."
Here's a picture of it. And it's pretty fantastic.
He looks so happy.
That's the other thing, and someone, a random curiosity pointed this out, and I thought it was really funny, is Kana is, she's also the one that planned a lot of the haunted house things and how to make it seem more creepy. She is incredibly smart and devious at times, because she gives Dara the sign, and he hates the sign because it means he won't get food, but she also compliments him and tells him it looks good on him. And she is constantly toying with, like, Dara. Like, she is very manipulative despite how she appears. I think the best part is because they keep track of him entirely, because if he's away, he'll eat something. So they take him to school with them. And the girls are, they do baton.
Just give him a muzzle.
And says, yeah. He looks at and says, "What are those?" And she just looks at him and says, "They're for hitting you." And I don't know why, but this just completely killed me.
Smack him.
At the end of the episode, Dara just goes off to the beach where they have a couple of steps. It's like one tier worth of like four steps. And he just runs up and down them the whole night. Until he ends up looking like this. There's no other way to put it. And a lot of people become quite concerned. This is one of the funniest episodes I think I've seen of anything in a long time.
That Fat has a sick sense of humor. Another Garfield joke.
It's okay, because the next episode he's fat again. But he has muscle under there, so now he can run errands for people. And while that episode was the funniest, I think the next episode is the most heartwarming and touching so far. One of the things about the main girl, Tamako, is that her mother passed away, and there's a song that she always sang when she was raising her. And she doesn't know the name of the song, so she's always looking up songs at the local record store. That's always been one of the main plot lines, but this episode is specifically about her little sister, Anko, and how she has a crush on one of the boys in her school who's moving away, and she doesn't know what to do or how to say that she's going to miss him. And so, Tamako, being the smarter-than-you-would-expect girl, tells her to go give him some mochi, and everything works out okay.
Mochi is important.
It's a slight spoiler, but I think it's just too good not to mention. We learn what the song is. What the song is, actually, it's a song that her father wrote for her, because he was at one point in a band and he wanted to express how he liked her, so he wrote a song. And by the way, the band name was Dynamite Beans the Third. Which is another mochi reference, I think. And we learned the reason that they never knew the song is because her mom was always off key.
Oh.
But it's just a very heartwarming episode. Like,
is this like when we watch Lucky Star and we learn about Kanata's mom?
This is actually good.
Oh, I like Lucky Star.
I like it fine. I like the tall girl.
Miyuki?
She's pretty cool.
Because she's voiced by Aya Ando.
That's not intentional, I swear.
Yeah, but, sure.
But it's... They do another one of the things where... another little thing in anime I always like is when you have a unique credit scene for an episode... Like, this one is a montage of her father meeting her Tamako's mother for the first time, and him writing the song in his desk with a really old school lamp.
Yeah, and, this is just like that episode of Lucky Star.
Yeah, yeah. But it just, you don't even have to watch the whole show, but I think those two episodes are really, they really stand out on this show. It's funny because one of my favorite parts of the show is the other denizens of the marketplace. They're not very present in the current episode, and yet it's still one of the strongest, I think. Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. I like this show so much more than I thought I would.
But you know what would make it better?
What?
If it was sci-fi.
No, it is sci-fi, though. Dara is a computer, actually. He is a robot. Because,
what?
He can be used... Well, kind of, it's confusing. Like, the way it works is he can be used as a phone, sort of. Like, he can project video images. And so, we learned this actually in the first episode, but when he is... Usually, he can do it consciously, but as of recent, he can only do it when he's unconscious. But they can use him like a video phone and relay messages. But he's broken so that he automatically passes out whenever it happens. And that's why Choi, the girl from the island, comes, because he hasn't been answering their messages. So, also, he can be used as a projector if he eats the outlet or the plug. They use that in this episode, too.
Oh, by the way...
Because they just kind of hook him up to a VHS player.
Oh, by the way, here's some news. Happy birthday, Tuukka Rask.
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, goodness. Oh, good. What are you, I like how all these characters have same face. Sorry.
A little bit, except for the old guy.
You know what I liked? I liked how the Kyoto Animation promo thing with the dudes, they all had that face as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was a wonderful... I wish that was a full show.
If only.
The swimming dudes. I want to mash up with Kenny Loggins playing with the boys with that.
Oh, I just remember two more things I've watched recently. I'm going to keep this as short as possible.
Okay.
Number one is, because I hate people,
okay,
I showed a bunch of my friends Belladonna of Sadness.
Oh,
have
that
you heard of this?
Yeah, I was at a panel, a Tezuka panel. I saw clips of it. It's really just god awful.
It is a garbage movie that does some neat animation tricks, and
well, like the whole beginning where it's like people. Like live actors with rotoscoped heads over them, like animated heads over them. And it looks super creepy, and like one guy shoots the other guy, and he's like, "Ow, why'd you do that?" And he
actually, that's a different one from what you're thinking of.
Oh well, it's probably still garbage.
It's a very artsy movie, and
that is this the one where they're like in ancient Rome?
No.
Oh,
I think you're thinking of Cleopatra.
Oh, okay.
This is the one that takes place during, like, medieval times.
Oh, okay, yeah, and this one's also garbage.
Oh, it's funny because those other two were kind of goofy wacky, but this one's just like, oh, it's the devil, and there's nothing happy about this story at all. And it's kind of terrible. One thing worth noting, though, I think, is the fact that, do you know who directed this?
Who?
The same dude who did Odin.
Oh,
I explained that to everyone after we got through about an hour of the movie, and I decided to stop
Odin.
And flicking
Odin.
And I was like, you know what's going to make this make a lot more sense? This was directed by the same guy who did Odin.
But there was like a bunch of people who did Odin.
Yeah.
Which is partially why it's so terrible.
Why it's so bad.
A fucking movie, man.
Yeah.
It's like, that'll kill your love of 80s space opera right there. It's like, this is one when it doesn't have any good characters at all.
Yeah, that's still a terrible movie.
Yeah.
And then, another thing I watched.
And then you watched The Devil's Advocate.
No.
I got an IM from SD Sam Shelley. He's like, man, I felt bad for you, Andrew, because he wasn't getting who Al Pacino played.
Well, the thing is, I was thinking it.
Okay.
But I was like, this is way too stupid. That can't be it.
You have to believe that Al Pacino...
I'll keep this in mind for the next time you ask me to guess what Al Pacino's doing. Okay, so there was actually another 3-minute anime that started airing this season. It's called Line Offline Salary Man. And this is a 3-minute show about a dude named Mr. Moon who works at a average salary job. And he works with a cat lady, a bunny lady, and a bear who's called Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown does not talk. And it's just general silly antics. Like, the first episode, everyone's looking at him funny. And he's like, why is everyone looking at me funny? He's like, do I have nose hairs poking out? And then he asks Mr. Brown, and Mr. Brown shakes his head and walks out of the room. Then he gets a text from Mr. Brown. And Mr. Brown says, no, they're not poking out today. And he's like, wait a minute. Today? You mean they were looking at me because my nose hairs weren't poking out?
Yeah.
And then the nose hair pokes out.
Oh.
This is a stupid show, and I absolutely love it.
That seems to be the thing now. It's like 15-minute or 3-minute anime.
I actually like them a lot. It's a format that works very well, and it actually means the animation is pretty cheap, especially for Inferno Cop.
I hesitate to really get into Inferno Cop.
All I know is that they gave away posters somewhere, and I don't have them, and that's a freaking problem.
That's, just print your own.
Yeah.
Print your own.
Yeah.
So
that's what I've been up to.
Okay, so we need to still answer that question. So we're going to have an extra C segment this time.
Yes.
But that's okay. We can have, like, you know, the feedback at the end in its own segment.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we're going to say goodbye. Well, we're going to stop this one, and we're going to do the next segment.